Hello and welcome to another episode of the Kids Media Club podcast. This is a slightly different episode from normal. We're taking a trip down memory lane and revisiting some of our favourite discussions about gaming and Roblox. Joe, Emily and myself have chosen a few of our top picks to share with you. So enjoy. First, we have this clip from our interview with Ricardo Brencino from GameFan, who shares his insights about Roblox.
But knowing that most of our listeners in the Kids Media, most of the Kids Media Club podcast listeners will be aware of Roblox, but may not necessarily have spent much time on the platform. So as a way to kick off, I thought, give us a quick intro to GameFan. But for those listeners who perhaps aren't as familiar with Roblox as certainly I am, give us a bit of a rundown on what Roblox the platform is and how important it's become in kids' media lives.
Great, yeah. Let me start answering the Roblox question. Roblox is, I'll give you two answers. First is, I think that the easiest way for me to describe it to anyone is Roblox is almost like the YouTube for gaming. It's a platform that hosts millions of user-generated games, and players go into Roblox or fans go into Roblox, and there's a myriad of different experiences and games that they can go and play. Now, in reality, what it is a massive community of Gen Z and Alpha, to the tune of 70 million daily active users. They just reported it in the Roblox most recent earnings report. So there are millions and millions of kids that come and use this. Oh, it's almost like an evolution of social media. It's where they form community. Gaming or the experiences are almost the excuse to come in here. And they come in here, hang out with their friends in the digital world, meet new friends, and do multiple things. It's almost like the today's equivalent to going and hanging out at the mall. They go in the morning to school, they go to whatever, soccer practice, any sports practice, and then they come hang out with their friends on Roblox. So it's a very, very powerful and engaged community, and anyone in those generations is participating there.
Thinking about the two platforms, can you tell me, with Roblox, is there any sort of like genres that come to that are kind of solidifying, like what types of games are you running for these brands? I mean, if we think back to YouTube, certain types of genres became very popular on YouTube, like nursery rhymes or pranks. Like, do we see the same kind of trends with Roblox?
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of similarities between YouTube and Roblox. There's a lot of differences too, of course. But even in the types of games, there's certain genres that are very popular. But also what's interesting is that those genres become more or less popular over time. Sometimes there's new genres that pop up. But some of the bigger ones are simulators, which tend to form around gameplay that is somewhat repetitive in nature. And by doing one action multiple times, then you get better and you continue to level up and do better in the game. There's tycoons, which is essentially building out your own empire of X, category X. There's obbies that are obstacle courses. There are some fighting games. There are some driving games as well. So those are some tower defense games. So those are some of the biggest genres.
And in terms of those genres, just building out that in terms of what they might be to brands and to kids' IP, explain a little bit about the characteristics of the platform, how, rather than just a marketing tool, how can these games and experiences turn viewers into real fans? How can it get them immersed in brands in a way that just watching video perhaps can't?
So what we believe is incredibly powerful of UGC gaming is that these are active activities. It's a little redundant, but it's active engagement, whereas on our traditional video social media platforms or even TV, you're watching and enjoying the content very much. In this case, you're participating in the content. You have a say in what happens or what doesn't happen. So in a way, the way that, we think about it is that UGC gaming and activating on these platforms, gives brands the incredible engagement from experiential marketing and events that we all love, but with the incredible scale of digital. That's why we believe it is the next frontier of brand engagement. There's multiple reasons for that. First, there's an entire generation, like I mentioned earlier, of Gen Z and Alpha that are on these platforms more and more, and that's where you're gonna be able to find them authentically. But second is that ability to engage very organically and actively with these brands. I'm not just watching a commercial. I'm not even watching my favorite TV show. I'm in it, I'm active, I'm participating, and that is tremendously powerful.
Next, we have entertainment lawyer Simon Pullman talking about the power of gaming IP and the convergence of gaming, TV, and cinema. Looking at something like gaming, do you think that, how has that emerged in the last couple of years as a source of kind of really powerful IP? And I'm thinking of the way the Mario Brothers has kind of transferred to cinema and the great success that that has had. Is that an indicator that we're going to see a lot of sort of gaming brands start to kind of move outside of gaming into other territories?
Unquestionably. And I think there's a couple of factors, to that. Part of it is to do with the experience of gaming and the immersion of playing a game, of being in that world, and also the inherently sort of social aspect to it in terms of, gamers are, I think, unusually engaged with each other, in communities around a game. Now, that's not always the most positive thing, but there's no doubt that if you create something that they love, they will share that, they will talk about it, all those kinds of things. The other side of the coin, in terms of the success of the adaptation, it comes in part with, effectively, we now have, for the first time in my estimation, a generation of executives in and around the entertainment business and in Hollywood who have grown up with and understand gaming. And that's right across the ecosystem. It's lawyers like myself, it's agents, it's studio executives, and perhaps most importantly, it's writers and directors who, for whom it's not just, oh, we bought this thing, right? We've heard it's sold a lot of copies. Look at the picture on the box, write something, make something up. But actually people who have played the games, who understand them, who understand the themes, who understand the values and understand the fandom, behind it. And then, and I think maybe a final factor is because video game companies make so much money, at the highest level, at least in the AAA space, those games are so successful in and of themselves, they now can command a level of involvement and approval that previously perhaps they would not have been able to get. And that is very much the case with the success stories that everybody is talking about presently, The Last of Us, where Sony was involved, but also Neil Druckmann. In fact, he co-wrote the pilot and directed several episodes, and that effectively, it's more or less a verbatim retelling of the game. And where there are deviations, well, they're sort of authorized because Druckmann's involved, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Nintendo. And to me, one of the most striking things about seeing that movie was just in the opening titles and seeing the Nintendo logo there, seeing a Chris Melandri and Shigeru Miyamoto production, right there up at the forefront of this is Nintendo, and Nintendo clearly had their hand in every aspect of this production. They were not going to allow it to deviate from the brand values of Mario and what the fans would expect. Some critics would say that leads to perhaps a safe production. I personally loved it. It was everything that I would hope to see and expect. And I think that's without diminishing the involvement of the actors and Universal and marketing, all of whom did a fabulous job, I do think a big factor here was when those parents brought their kids to Mario, when I went to the screening and I saw the whole family dressed in Mario cosplay. Mm-hmm. They went there and they saw Super Mario. They didn't see something Super Mario name only. They saw Super Mario and they saw the world around it. And they left thinking, what about that Donkey Kong movie that could potentially come in the future?
Just picking up on one of the things when you were saying the convergence of stuff is we're also seeing that a lot of the animation tools that have developed now are using video game tools. So a lot of the tech that's being shared is being shared across animation for TV and screen, as well as animation that's being used as part of the gaming engine. And you're having teams and crews that are kind of moving from one area to the other. And I wondered whether that production convergence has an implication as well in terms of how the adaptations roll out. I mean, if you look at something like Arcane, which there's real integration there between the teams that worked on the video game and the Netflix series.
Totally. And Arcane is an unquestionable success story, very, very critically acclaimed, embraced by both the fans of the game and people who just, you know, I don't play the game, but I really, really like the series. I think people would say the same about the CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk series, which got, you know, which was really well received. But this piece is just so fascinating to me, because this is kind of potentially where things are going in the future, which is, if you look at Unreal Engine, for example, right, and MetaHumans and these tools, there is going to be a point where it becomes possible to develop game and interactive experience concurrently with linear and effectively use the same assets, which from a franchise building standpoint, right, we've put aside the technical just for a moment, we talk about creatively. Well, now you don't have necessarily the issue in quite the same way in terms of the workflow of, well, let's do the game first. We don't know, oh, game gets delayed. Okay, now we wait another 3 years for the movie. But you can potentially sort of start to see these concepts, which, you know, is sort of the essence of this word, you know, transmedia that people talk about. And so for that reason, some of the gaming companies might very well become powerhouses in you know, across linear entertainment, and vice versa potentially. And I will say, I mean, you spoke about the LinkedIn at the start. I mean, this is one of the things that I love about LinkedIn, because through those pieces, and it's been an outlet for me, I've discovered a lot of people who are thinking similarly about this stuff and are excited about it. So I learned from them. I mean, I had an amazing conversation with a gentleman in Australia, this guy Nathan Basley, this week, who's in the virtual production space. You know, so he's working with studios and governments to sort of, you know, work with them and sort of implement these technologies, I think primarily on the film and television side, but also gaming. But that as you say, Andy, that's the next frontier. And it's coming fairly quickly, I think.
Finally, we close up this episode with fellow co-host Jo's thoughts about why she believes game developers are the new storytellers.
What really struck me is some of these game developers, a lot of them don't think they're storytellers, but a few have realized that they are, and they are. They're really clever storytellers. You don't have a Roblox experience that's had billions of visits and has been alive, you know, for 4, 5, 6, 7 years with all of the regular updates that you make without being a storyteller. And that, for me, is the key takeaway. You speak to these game developers, and I had lots of meetings with them, and I would say, you're inherent storytellers. But what's interesting is, much like that YouTube model where Mr. Beast intimately knows his audience, he knows when they're tuning in, what they like, which parts of his video that they like, that's the same with some of these game developers. They know their user base so very well. They know what stories they're receptive to, and then they deliver them. And it's really fascinating.
And that's all from us. I hope you enjoyed this mixtape episode of All Things Roblox. If you haven't already done so, please consider subscribing or giving us a follow. Until next time, happy listening.